Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
Did you know in addition to education assistance, UPS now provides housing for qualified employees? Through the UPS Kentucky Living Options and Opportunities Path, also known as UPS Kentucky Loop, you can work part-time in Louisville, go to school at Jefferson Community and Technical College, and receive housing for up to 2 years. Earn a degree or learn a trade. It's up to you. Loop benefits are available to those who live outside the Louisville metro area, whether you're just starting college or going back to school. It's time to get in the loop. For more information, visit upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.
Time now for Fast Break Friday on The V Show, presented by Universal Windows Direct, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bob Valvano and Mike Pratt.
Because I can't hear you. There we go. Yeah, I was just chatting with Nick because I haven't done a show for the last 2 days. Yesterday they played our game, I guess. I had to call the afternoon game with Anish Shroff. And then Wednesday we had guests as I was traveling and getting settled here in Charlotte. So I haven't talked to Nick in a while. So we were chatting and all of a sudden this guy barges in and announces it's Fast Break Friday and just starts playing music and just a little bit rude, actually, but we're glad to be with you. Nice to have you with us here on Fast Break Friday, coming to you from Charlotte. Beautiful location for this event. I have not been part of the ACC tournament. I actually started doing ACC tournaments before Louisville joined the league, but even with that taken into account, they haven't been in Charlotte in a long time. And so I haven't been here for the tournament, and Charlotte has really upped its game. I got to admit, this is a really good venue for it. It's almost like very, very similar feel to when the Final Four is in Indianapolis. Everything is right around here. This actually is called Uptown Charlotte, and there's places to walk and eat and just stroll around, some bars and clubs, bowling alley, drugstore. Literally, we're staying right across the street from the hotel, but even if you weren't, there's a whole bunch that are within walking distance. It's a good venue. They won't be back here for a while. Next year, they go to Greensboro, which is certainly not Jim Boeheim's favorite place. Boeheim always complains when it's going to be in Greensboro. And Roy Williams, they had a great exchange. Roy Williams said to him, because it's such a small city compared to every other place we go, even compared to Charlotte. Greensboro is much smaller than Charlotte. And so Boeheim complaining about it. And Roy Williams said to him, well, you know, there's a golf tournament that's in an even smaller town in Georgia that people seem to pay a lot of attention to. And Boeheim said, yeah, but that's the only golf tournament going on that week. Because there are a lot of basketball tournaments going on. So I guess they'll just have to agree to disagree. But, I don't know. Had Louisville joined the league yet when they were in Greensboro? I'm not sure Louisville fans have gone to Greensboro yet. I can't remember. But I do know that it is a much smaller environment, but they get so excited about it there, and everybody in the city's wrapped up in it, and so it's not a terrible place to have it at all, but it is certainly smaller than all the other venues. We go from there, and then we're going to D.C., and then we're going back to Brooklyn, and D.C. was okay. I'm glad we're not going to Atlanta. Atlanta's the only site that I don't think you ever got a feeling that they really gave a rat's ass that you were there at all. Even D.C., probably because Maryland for such a long time was a member of the conference, there was still a sense that the people were pretty jazzed up that you were there. So that was a cool thing. But and Brooklyn is the same deal. There's this area around the Barclays Center, and you get a feel for it. There's a lot of fans, and there's a decent vibe. And the big thing is New York Life is the sponsor of this tournament. They sponsor a number of tournaments. I guess they're sponsoring the Pac-12 too. I don't know if they're doing any other ones, but they want to have it in New York on occasion. So I guess for the foreseeable future, they'll go back to Brooklyn. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind a rotation being Charlotte and Greensboro, that's fine. Frankly, those four cities would be fine with me. Go Charlotte, Greensboro, D.C., and New York. Somebody made the point, you know, with Notre Dame and Louisville in the league, why don't they consider Indianapolis? But I guess somebody's got to put a proposal in to host it, and I don't know if anybody ever has pursued that, but Indianapolis certainly wouldn't be. If you're going to go to Brooklyn or go to D.C., it's not completely ridiculous to go to Indianapolis. It'd be obviously the longest drive for some of the Eastern-based universities. But, I mean, hell, if you're in Greensboro, you're going from Boston College or Pitt, you're probably not driving there either. You're probably still flying. So it's something to think about. Louisville's game against North Carolina, very weird vibe after the game because, I mean, North Carolina beat them pretty soundly. And yet, I don't know that anybody, I mean, maybe Chris was. I didn't hear his comments. Let me give you the heads up so you know from where I'm speaking. As I think many of you know, we do all the games in the ACC tournament on the network starting Wednesday night. So we did two Wednesday, four yesterday. I'll do two tonight and then the championship game tomorrow. But because of the nice cooperation that we get from Kenny Klein and U of L and the folks at ESPN Radio, they let me run out and do the post-game interview because we really don't have any responsibilities on the radio between games. They send it back to Connecticut, and they do, you know, they do reports from the studio. So yes, I'm taking a sip of water. I'm still fighting this bronchitis, which is not completely gone. So I beg your indulgence. But anyway, so. After the win two nights ago, I got out there and we can't get Chris Mack because it just takes too long. The ACC tournament follows the format of the NCAA tournament, and they take forever to get the coach before you're allowed to get him to local radio. He's got to go do a whole bunch of national responsibilities. He's got to do the assembled media, and they have a format for that where they bring players, and it literally is like an hour afterwards, and they just can't wait that long. So I got Mike Pegues two nights ago. He had the scout for the Notre Dame game, and we had a nice chat. And we thought we were going to do the same thing last night, but Chris kept them in the locker room so long, unbelievably long, that all the time between the games had dissipated, and I had to leave. So I believe Jody did both. He ran and got he did the post-game interview with the coach on my recorder, and then had Gus Allen, our producer, bring it back to the table, and then he went and did players because I was supposed to do the coach and he was going to do the players. But the point I'm making is I didn't get to talk to the coaching staff yesterday, so I don't know. I'm speaking for myself. I don't know. The coaches may have been livid and irate, and you know, just the comments afterwards reflected that. I don't know. But watching it and from talking to people, you know, around it, the thought was, I mean, Louisville wasn't terrible. They had some really good stretches. They looked good when they closed the gap. But North Carolina was really good. They do some things literally, and that to me is the definition of, you know, a dangerous postseason team. Can they, do they do things? Are they capable of doing things with some regularity that you look around and say, boy, not many people can do that. And Carolina is one of those teams. They play efficiently at a pace that is just almost impossible for anybody else to keep up with. They were, and there's a lot of reasons for that being such a part of their success. I mean, they lead the ACC in scoring, rebounding margin, assists, and they're second in three-pointers made per game. They are playing. Rick Pitino used to talk about this from the defensive point of view. Roy Williams and his mentor, Dean Smith, looked at it from the offensive point of view. Rick wanted to pressure you and make you play uncomfortably fast with his defense. That was what, offensively, they tried to be aggressive. But if you remember, you watched Rick, his team was not a real breakneck offensive team. But what they were is they would extend and they would really get run bodies after you and fresh legs and try and get you to play faster than you wanted to play. Dean Smith and Roy Williams now after him, they do it with their offense. They go so fast that generally you get swept up in the tempo of the game and you start playing very fast. And it's amazing. Sometimes it happens even before you realize it. And the next thing you know, you've had three or four possessions that have been faster than you'd like, perhaps a little out of control. And they are loving that. And so they're scoring. As we said, they lead the league in scoring. So they're very efficient. They turn those into points. And next thing you know, you're down double digits. And that really is, you know, they expect at some point you may make a run. And Louisville did. But they usually then just say, okay, well, we'll make the next run. And that's what they did yesterday. They would get the ball from the defensive backcourt to their offensive attacking zone, which I define as, you know, from the top of the three-point circle in. They would get the ball from the backcourt to that line regularly with 26 or more seconds on the shot clock. They were getting the ball there in 3-4 seconds, which means one of two things was happening. One, they scored a lot of baskets just by beating Louisville down the floor. And that obviously was very troubling to Chris Mack. But there was a stretch in the first half where they just couldn't. They literally were just being overwhelmed by the speed with which they were playing. They would get down the floor and just throw it and run it right up Louisville's back as Louisville's trying to get back in transition and score. But then a little bit later, as Louisville eventually did a little bit better job of getting back to not let them score in the initial surge, Carolina's still getting the ball from that backcourt to the offensive top of the key in literally 4 seconds. So you've got to defend them now for 26 seconds, an explosive team with lots of weapons and good shooters and good passers. Their assist-to-turnover ratio is extremely strong at 1.5, which is one of the best in the country. In fact, one of the only teams that's better than that is the team that will be in the first game of the doubleheader tonight, UVA, who's at 1.6. So, I mean, it's very tough. They're either getting easy, cheap baskets by beating you down the floor, or they're making you defend them over 26 seconds with guys that are really good passers, good cutters, that move the ball, that get a lot of assists, that can make the three. Boy, that puts a lot of pressure on you. And then, you know, you get swept up in playing with that frenetic pace, and there's a couple of bad possessions that go awry. Not everybody can be Kobe White, who plays at an absolutely jaw-dropping, eye-popping pace and still doesn't go out of control. I don't believe he made a turnover yesterday. At least late in the game, when I checked the stat sheet, he had scored all those points and he had 6 assists and hadn't made one turnover yet in the game. To be able to play at that speed and not turn the ball over at all is extraordinary. So Louisville, you know, not playing 95% of the teams in the country, would be able, if they were able to play in stretches as they did against Carolina, I think they will be competitive. That's what the players came away from that. The season's not over. They're going to hear their name called Sunday. And really, no matter who they hear it called against, they should feel like, well, we've faced just about everybody of quality in this country. I mean, they've played Tennessee and Marquette and Michigan State, and in their conference alone, they've played Virginia twice and Duke and Carolina. And, you know, and so they've seen a bunch of different styles, but they've also seen, you know, about as good as it gets in certain capacities. Carolina's running at offensive efficiency yesterday included on that list. And Louisville still made some runs at them and certainly didn't get their doors blown off, although Carolina was comfortably ahead for most of the late part of the game. So I think if you're Louisville, it's not trying to put a bow tie on a pig. It's looking at it and saying, hey, you know, can we get a win a game or two in the NCAA tournament? If Louisville's playing the second weekend of the NCAA, I've told you, that is an unqualified, grandiose success. It's been a very successful year right now, just as it is, 20 wins, 10 wins in the ACC, 10-8, a bye in the first round, a win in the ACC tournament, only the second they've ever had. If they can win in their first NCAA game, where they should be a favorite, I think their seeding should make them a favorite in that first game. That's already a tremendous. The only thing they wouldn't have done of the list of what I think were really home run achievements was win 20 games in the regular season. They had to get one in the ACC tournament, but I guess you could say maybe that's splitting hairs. They still did get to 20 wins. But if they could win a game in the ACC tournament, which they did that, if they could get an NCAA bid, which we expect they will, and if they could win a game in the NCAA tournament, that's a pretty good year given the reality of everything they inherited. But you know, they got a chance, depending on their seeding, if they could play their way through the second weekend. I mean, I've said that before. You've heard me say it on the show. If you were playing in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, there's only 16 teams left in the country out of the 355 who started, you owe nobody an apology. You've had a tremendously successful year, no matter what the fans may say. Well, you don't know our program. We don't define success by that. Well, that's fine. I get it. But the numbers and the data and the reality is that's an extraordinary year. So and there was nothing that I saw leaving the UNC game that would make me say, well, there's no way they can win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. I mean, it doesn't mean I expect that necessarily. It's not at that level, but it certainly looks as if they have a good chance, and that's the way that's the takeaway I think they have to have coming away from that game. This is Fast Break Friday. Mike Pratt's covering the SEC tournament down in Nashville, although he'll squeeze a few minutes out for us later. We're very appreciative. Jay Billis is going to carve a few minutes out for us in just about 5 or 6 minutes from right now. He, of course, has the call for the evening session last night. He'll have the two games tonight and the championship game tomorrow on TV side. We'll have it on the radio side. The Zion phenomenon is this. I get it. Believe me, you know, listen, let me tell you the truth. Even, you know, people like us work for the company, and I've always said I'm grateful so for how ESPN's treated me, and I'm very proud to have been an employee in one way, shape, or form there for going on 20 years. But, yeah, the Zion hype was overbearing at times. But there's two things, and the second point is much more important than the first. The first is that the TV ratings in Louisville for college basketball are always off the charts, the strongest in the country, and it's not by a small margin. So given that, people are probably watching longer than they do elsewhere. So they keep running the promo because the assumption is people are watching in nuggets. They're watching in TV McNuggets. So they don't just leave the TV on for hours at a time. We do in Louisville, because once the games start here, we put those puppies on and it's on. So they are showing Zion, and they show Zion again. They show Zion again, and you see it 15 times. But that's because there are good numbers of people in the country who aren't seeing it 15 times because they're not watching for the duration that Louisville is. So that's why they, you know, they, no matter how long you're watching, 5 minutes or 55 minutes or an hour and 55 minutes, you're going to see Zion. And so when you are the guy watching for the hour and 55 minutes, you're up to your eyeballs in Zion and it gets a little tiresome. I get it. I'm not even here to dispute it. I mean, Dan Bonner said something to me yesterday that was true and interesting, and he said, you know, I kidded him because I walked over before the game. He got a very nice award. He got a journalism award for the ACC, the Skeeter Francis Award. They give to a couple of people each year that have been tremendously good in the coverage and in the generally in the media, but other ways in supporting and covering and promoting the league, and Dan's been at it, God, I mean, with Raycom forever, and so he was the recipient last night. He was doing the TV game for, the game is on two TV networks simultaneously. It's on ESPN, it's also on Raycom. He was part of the Raycom broadcast team with West Durham. Well, I said to him, I was kidding before the game, because obviously everybody knew, you know, Zion was playing, and it was all over the place. It was every hype you could see, and so I sneaked up behind him after I congratulated him for the award, and I said, I don't know if you heard, but Zion Williamson's going to play tonight for Duke. And he turned around and laughed, of course, because obviously it was ridiculous. It had been everywhere. And he said, yeah. He said, you know, I for about 2 months, I didn't know there were any other players in college basketball. It seemed like he was the only player there was. Excuse me. And so we get it. You know, we just rolled our eyes every time they, you know, there's Zion on the screen, Zion on the crawls, Zion getting off the bus. I get it. But you know, not everybody watches for that length of time, which is the less significant of the two points that I'm going to make. The more significant is very rarely, not always, not often, but very rarely, and even less rarely, you find a guy who, very rarely you find a guy whose performance meets the hype. And even less frequently you find a guy whose performance exceeds the hype. Zion's performance exceeded the hype. I don't care if he was on nonstop 2 hours straight. That was a performance that transcends the game. If you, I'm sure it looked that way on TV, but I promise you, if you were in the arena, I mean, Bonner looked over at me and said, you know, I've never seen him in person before. He said, that was like nothing I've ever seen. He said, I can't even think of another athlete that in my watching him strikes me as being that dominant. He went back to Spencer Haywood. He said, maybe Spencer Haywood back in the 60s. I mean, and if you were courtside, that's how it came across. It looked like a varsity player. And keep in mind, he's playing with some of the best players in the country. I mean, Syracuse has some good players. Frank Howard's a hell of a player. Brissett's a hell of a player. And he's got three other terrific players on his own roster. And he still looked like a kid who was on the varsity at his school who just decided to scrimmage for a little while with the JVs. He was incredible how quick he is, his jumping ability. And he is a very, very smart player. One of the reasons he's got his hand on so many basketballs is because he has a sense of where the play is going, and he's quicker than the other nine guys on the floor, and so he can get there before they do, and he gets a hand on it, and he knocks a pass away, he gets a hand on a rebound, he blocks a shot. I mean, he has made 12 shots in a row last night. He made his last, I guess 13. He made his last six in a row for the last game before he got hurt. So he has now made 19 shots in a row, which is one short of the all-time record at Duke. Ala Abdelnaby had 20 in a row at one point. But, I mean, the discussion was, well, how many minutes will he be able to play? Will he be sharp? He's probably going to be a little rusty. And so then to come out and put on a transcendent performance, one that was just for the ages. I mean, blocking shots, running the floor, getting loose balls, hitting the only three-pointer he took. He is, I mean, Duke is good without him. They're not poor, but they're not super-duper special by any stretch. With him, they're special. I mean, there were, and to give you an idea, there was one point in the game that was, I think, 39, like 34, I think that's about right. Duke was winning, and if you took Zion and Frank Howard off the floor, the score would have been 13-10. I mean, they were just putting crazy numbers up, and Howard was very good and impressive, but that just, again, only underscores how unbelievable Zion was. He really was. I'm not a guy who gets caught in that hype very much. It's not what it's about. He's a very good player, but there are other guys on the court. But that was, with all the hype and all the excitement about his return, that was a performance for the ages. I mean, that guy was spectacular. And, you know, he also loves to play, and that comes across. And if you're a fan, you appreciate that. You know, you want to see guys play that have the same enthusiasm for the game. To play it, you have to watch it. And he loves to play. So very good day for Zion, for sure. And Duke looks special with him. And it's going to be a lot of fun because, you know, these are unbelievable rivals, Duke and Carolina. The Carolina people correctly pointed out, we beat you twice. Duke correctly pointing out, yeah, you beat us twice without Zion, though. So there's going to be a lot of, it is going to be electric in the building tonight. So we're looking forward to that. It's Fast Break Friday, presented by Universal Windows Direct. Thank you very much for their sponsorship and you for joining us. Thanks to our friends in Lexington who are joining us as well on the network for Fast Break Friday. Mike Pratt will join us a little bit later, but Jay Billis is the guy who is going to step up and join us next, and we'll look forward to talking with him here on Fast Break Friday on ESPN Radio.
Hey guys, it's Nick Valvano, and I want to tell you about my friends at Expert Sleep Medicine. I, like many men, and my dad, suffer from sleep apnea. I didn't even realize I had it. I was tired all the time. I was sometimes hitting the wrong buttons. You probably heard that. But hey, who isn't tired? Well, thanks to Expert Sleep Medicine, I now sleep peacefully through the night using my CPAP machine. And don't worry about an overnight in-lab study. Get this, you can schedule an in-home sleep study today and get tested from the comfort of your own bed. So check them out at expertsleep.com or visit one of their four locations in Louisville and Southern Indiana. That's expertsleep.com.
My house has a new glow. I love my windows. Universal Windows Direct.
Hey, it's Bob Valvano. Right now, for every window you buy, you get the next window free, plus 0% financing for 36 months. Call 502-487-5200 or go to universalwindowsdirect.com. Like me, you'll be saying, I love my windows.
Hey, this is Mike Pratt, and do you know what sets a community bank apart from the rest? Friendly service, attention to detail, focus on making sure customers get what they need. At River City Bank, you will receive all of that and more. Be it a home improvement project, construction of a new home, or a bridge loan, their team is with you every step of the way. Visit any convenient River City Bank location or online at rivercitybankky.com. Hometown banking, hometown people, River City Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Did you know in addition to education assistance, UPS now provides housing for qualified employees? Through the UPS Kentucky Living Options and Opportunities Path, also known as UPS Kentucky Loop, you can work part-time in Louisville, go to school at Jefferson Community and Technical College, and receive housing for up to 2 years. Earn a degree or learn a trade. It's up to you. Loop benefits are available to those who live outside the Louisville metro area, whether you're just starting college or going back to school. It's time to get in the loop. For more information, visit upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Pratt, here to tell you about Premier Packaging, a locally owned business that specializes in packaging, shipping, and logistics. Since 1984, Premier Packaging has taken a straightforward approach you can trust. With shipping costs on the rise, their team of professionals will work with you personally to minimize costs and increase your bottom line. From inbound, outbound, storing, and picking, Premier Packaging has solutions for your businesses, large or small. Visit Primpack.com and sign up for a free assessment. Premier Packaging. This approach makes a difference.
At Wichwich, they believe that a great sandwich has the power to make any day better. With over 30 customizable sandwiches and over 50 toppings, they let the guests build their perfect witch that they can get on one of six different breads or wraps, or even as a salad. With two area locations, visit Wichwich at Old Brownsboro Crossing or their new location at 221 South Hurstbourne Parkway. Order online at wichwich.com or download the new Wichwich app on your smartphone. Wichwich, superior sandwich.
All right, we're back here on Fast Break Friday. Thanks for being with us. Very appreciative for our next guest to carve a few minutes out for us. He rarely says no to us, and when he does, he always has a good reason. That's very kind of him because he's in great demand at this time of year. He is ESPN's analyst. He'll be on the call of the games. He was on the two quarterfinal games last night. He'll be on the two semifinals tonight and the championship tomorrow. It's Jay Billis. And Jay, so many things to talk about in a short window, so I will sidestep the usual pleasantries and banal conversation and get right to the meat of the matter. We understandably get a little bit of slack from people, from people, because it's all Zion, 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 Zion. Last night it was Zion getting off the bus, getting on the bus. But then he goes and plays last night, and I got to be honest with you, I think it's one of those rare instances where the performance not only met the hype, it exceeded the hype. Dan Bonner said to me he literally can't remember a guy dominating a college game. He went back to maybe Spencer Haywood. I mean, Dan's been around a while. Well, what did you take away from Zion's just majestic performance last night?
Yeah, it was stunning. You know, Bobby, I've never seen anybody like him on a basketball floor. And he has your jaw dropped in so many different things that he does. And, you know, look, I get it when people say, hey, you know, I've had enough, and there are other players out there. But you know, come on, man. It's like going to a golf tournament and not talking about Tiger Woods. He's the biggest thing in the game, and everybody knows it. And what are we going to do? Like, not talk about it? You know, there's a reason that these games are the highest rated games that we have, and it's because of him. Now, it's part because of Duke, but it's mostly because of him. And it's remarkable. Like, he did something last night that's never been done in the 66-year history of the ACC tournament. He went 13 for 13 in an ACC tournament game. And so what are we going to say? Well, the teams he was playing aren't any good. It's so different now. He's remarkable. And I don't even think you have to explain it. All you have to do is watch it and go, I've never seen anything like that guy ever.
You know, it's amazing. You watch, and because he's so gifted athletically, he's also a very smart player. I mean, if you watch, he has an incredible sense of where the play is going. I mean, he's a step ahead, and that's when he couples that with his athletic ability, that's why it seemed like the first half Duke was getting like 90% of the 50-50 balls, because he seemed to have his hand in on all of them. It'd be a rebound he'd knock away, or there'd be a loose ball, he'd be the first one to it. He was overplaying passing lanes. And, I mean, you couple that quickness with everybody gets caught up in his spectacular athleticism. He has a pretty good knowledge of the game for a young player, and I think that comes across with watching his positioning on all these plays and how quickly he gets there.
Yeah, he's got a great feel, and as you know better than I do, Bobby, like a lot of players look, very few players see, and he sees what's going on and reacts to it and anticipates it, and it's sort of like the old Wayne Gretzky thing. Is it's not so much where the puck is, it's where it's going to be, and he knows where it's going to be, and he's got a great sense on offensive rebounding. And look, his athleticism is a big factor, but it's not the only factor. It's not like he just can stand wherever he wants and out-jump people. He gets to the right spot, and then he does it. And he's always moving. He's a very good passer. And heck, he got his hands on a few balls and then wound up outlet passing as quickly as anybody you're going to see. And then beat it down the floor. He's really impressive in every way in the game, except he does not shoot the ball particularly well. His shot chart was basically 12 dots in the lane and 1-3, and that was it. And the only thing he didn't do well was shoot free throws. Everything else, he did about as well as you can do it.
You know what it underscores, and I don't mean this as a snarky comment, but Duke is good. I mean, they're certainly not just an ordinary team without him. But, I mean, you see the difference he makes. They're really only elite when he plays. I mean, honestly, they go up two levels in every way. He gives them an emotional lift. He communicates. Like you said, he starts the break. They're the only team that could probably run with North Carolina, especially when he's on the floor, because he gets the break started. And because they're not a great shooting team, he can create second-chance points and clean up some of their messes. I mean, again, no knock. Barrett's a special player. Reddish is. Jones is. But they're really not. I don't think they're particularly elite without him. He's what makes them elite.
Yeah, he's what makes them right there maybe the best team in the country. They're still, as you know, still really good without him. Because, I mean, heck, they beat Syracuse at Syracuse without him. And Duke has lost games at Virginia Tech before. So not having him there, if he were there, do they win at Virginia Tech? They probably do. They weren't perfect last night. They turned the ball over like crazy, but that can happen against Syracuse with the way they play. But there's no question. I mean, you put him out on the floor, and he changes everything, especially their defense. I mean, he gives them the ability to not only switch everything, but he can, you know, they get out in passing lanes better. He gets so many deflections, and people hear his footsteps. I mean, he only blocked one shot last night, but the one he blocked was pretty darn spectacular. He had five steals, and he had had even more deflections where he was affecting the play, along with seven. I think he had seven offensive rebounds, 14 rebounds overall, and it was ridiculous. I mean, and look, I know they played against the zone. It was a different type of game. The interesting part tonight will be back-to-back games after having been out, and then going from one game, which is not an up-and-down game, to this one against North Carolina, which will be. He's going to have to bust it in this one, so it'll be a little bit of a different experience.
Let's talk about Carolina and Louisville a little bit, because the Louisville fans will want to know your takeaways. I thought Carolina looked really good, played really well, and they not only did they play well, but they played well the way Roy wants them to play. I mean, I was looking at the clock. I charted, I believe it was seven straight possessions where the ball went from their defensive backcourt to the top of the circle in their offensive, and none of those possessions were more than 4 seconds. They either got a shot off with 26 or even more on the shot clock, or they were starting their offense with like 26 seconds. That is hard to guard a team with all those weapons when you got to guard them for 26 seconds instead of 17 or 18 seconds. And they were really on their game. Coby White has come a long way from the beginning of the year. He's the perfect point guard for their system. Am I overstating it, or did you walk away and say Carolina was really good yesterday?
No, they're really good, period. Really, Bobby, the last time that Carolina played poorly was against Louisville. I think it was January 12th when Louisville blew their doors off in Chapel Hill. And honestly, I mean, I was at that game, and it was the first time that I've ever seen a Carolina team where I said they went 40 minutes and really didn't play hard. Every team is going to have at some point, or almost every team is going to have at some point, you know, they have a bad half, or they don't, you know, they don't come out with fire, and then they, you know, they get chewed out or something, then they pick it up. That was the first time in 40 minutes where they didn't have anything. And I kind of thought, man, this team really is vulnerable. And then they've ripped off, like, I think since then they're 15-1, and they've been terrific. One of the best rebounding teams, even though they're not that big. They've really improved their defense because they play really hard. They've got a stopper in Kenny Williams, who did a great job on Jordan Wara. And they continue to be relentless in the way they push the ball up the court. And they're willing runners, which may be one of the hardest things. Like, you can sit there and say, well, you know, Roy Williams, well, his system is just, you know, just run, run, run. It's hard to get teams to run.
Yep.
A lot of teams want to run. And every player says, well, I want to play in a running system. No, they don't, because they don't want to run. It's hard. And they do hard things well.
I heard Pat Riley at a clinic make that exact point. He said every player says, oh, I want to play in a fast break system, and all coaches say I want to run. He said, but I'm telling you, if you're going to commit to this, you're going to have to push guys, because they are, especially late in games, they're not going to want to run. And, you know, they push through it. They play it. They push it for 40 minutes and puts a lot of pressure on you. Let me ask you, I know you got to go, but the Louisville fans will want to, you know, get your takeaway, because I hope we're not putting on a bow tie on a pig, but The people around here, I think, looked at it and said, hey, Carolina is probably just a little better than we are. They're a little better than most of the teams in the country right now, and they're playing well. Louisville had some stretches, though, where they made a run at them. And, you know, when they get to the tournament, at least the first round or even first two rounds, they should get teams that aren't at Carolina's level. So they might win a game or two in this NCAA tournament. Is that being overly optimistic based on what you saw yesterday?
No. I mean, Louisville's good. I don't think it's a great basketball team, but they're good. And, you know, look at the improvements some of the players have made just since the beginning of the season. Like, at the beginning of the year, who would have thought that Malik Williams and Stephen Enoch would combine for basically 19 and 12 at that spot, which they do. Both of them can step away and hit a shot, a perimeter shot, and they do a pretty decent job. Like, Williams is probably a much better defender. But Kristen Cunningham has become a really reliable point guard. I like their team a lot, and I love Dwayne Sutton, one of the better glue guys in the country. Are they a great team, and are they going to out-talent people? No. But man, they're good. So they'll probably get a 7 seed, is my guess, in the tournament, 6 or 7, but probably in the 7 range. And that means they'll play a 10 in the first round. And I think anybody they play, they should be better than, feel they're better than.
I know you got to run. I'll see you tonight, Jay. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it very much.
You got it, Bobby. Always a pleasure.
All right, Jay Billis with us here. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to get into the other game, but I know Louisville fans would like to get there, get his impression of what the takeaway was. And yeah, I mean they'll be the underdog in the second game. If they're a 7 seed, they would get a 10, then they would, according to numbers, you'd get, I guess, a 2, right? It's going to be difficult. Or would they get? I'm so bad at it's a 16 team. So the first round, the seeds add up to 17. One plays, and then the second one, yeah, it adds up to 9, because one would play 8 and 2 would play 7. So they would get the 7 seed if it gets to that point. So they would be the underdog in the second game. But, you know, or if that assumes that the game goes to 4, 2 could be upset. You never know. It's happened in the tournament before. But they can get a win in the NCAA tournament. And I think the big thing, and I heard Ryan McMahon making the comment that, look, I mean, you know, not like they were going to be cocky. I mean, if they go into a game that way, they're crazy, because, as he said, they're not more talented than a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they are a team that's been exposed to a lot of different styles and a lot of very, very high-level basketball. And so they are certainly not going to go out and be intimidated, I don't think, by anything. So hopefully they can get a tournament win. That would be a tremendous, tremendous achievement for this team. And we'll see if they're able to do it. Now, for the other game, Florida State, I had Virginia Tech. Selfishly, I have to tell you the truth, I don't root, you know, for teams, really. I root for my own to make my job easier. I had Virginia Tech, I think, 5 times this year. I did not have Florida State once. Florida State's the only ACC team I did not have during the course of the regular season, the only one. So I'm way more familiar with Virginia Tech, and I would have been more familiar with them going forward, especially in light of the fact that Florida State plays like a football team. I mean, Leonard Hamilton just keeps running bodies out there. But I will say this. I think both those teams are going to be very hard outs in the NCAA tournament. Virginia Tech was like the itsy bitsy spider, man, that just kept climbing and got knocked down and climbed back up again and knocked down. They just kept digging and digging and digging and digging. They couldn't get over the hump, and they finally did late, and it looked like they were going to win the game in regulation, and Florida State digs in and makes an incredible 3 by Vassell at in the left corner. Incredible play to tie the game. Then they go winning in overtime. They showed some great determination as well. So I think both those teams are going to be hard outs in the NCAA tournament. We'll see. Maybe none of them will. Maybe we're fooling ourselves. I don't think so, though. I mean, I've done so much ACC basketball this year and so many other leagues. I mean, it's not just hype. These teams are good. I mean, you certainly have Final Four / National Championship contenders with 3 teams here in UVA, Duke, and North Carolina. You really do. And I think you've got teams that nobody's going to want any part of playing in Florida State and Virginia Tech and Louisville and Syracuse. I don't think anybody's going to want any part of Syracuse, especially if they get Ty Battle back. My God, they did that yesterday without him. And he only went, in the game they beat Duke, he went for 30. So that's a pretty big hole they have to fill. So, you know, but the fact of the matter is, it's hard for me to assess a team that plays so differently than any team that I was ever involved with or most of the teams I've covered, and that is Leonard's playing basically a second platoon. He plays five guys, then he brings five more guys in, and it's okay if in those five there was a more defined pecking order, if you wanted to call it that, but they don't. They really, everybody does everything. I mean, they're a good rebounding team. They're almost plus five in rebounding. Their scoring margin's over eight a game, but plus eight a game, but they only have two double-figure scorers. Nobody averages more than 12. Nobody averages even 13 points a game, is what I'm trying to say. So they don't have the big go-to guys, and you look at that and you'd say, well, that's great, but if it's close, that's where it's going to really rear its ugly head. And yesterday was one of those games where you should have been able to make that case, and yet you couldn't. Because if you ask Phil Kofer, who hit a big shot down that stretch, you ask him, who's the go-to guy for you guys with so many people playing? He says, well, we'd like to look at it as we're all go-to guys. And that's great, but that's kind of a cop-out answer, because the fact of the matter is, the teams all still want to kind of know, like in Louisville's case, it's got to go to CC to trigger, and if Jordan can get the shot, that's great. But those are the two guys it starts with, and then it goes from there. Florida State doesn't even have that. So, but the other side is, and I've said this, I don't want to be a hypocrite, because I said this, you know, when I've seen other teams, like my beloved New York Knicks team from when I was a kid, they were all capable of shooting a big shot with the game on the line, the entire starting five. And, boy, that's really hard if you're the other team because, I mean, I'll be honest, I had some games where at the end of the game we would say, look, I wouldn't say it to the kids, but in the back of my mind I'm thinking, well, they may make a shot. If they make a shot, you know, good for them. But this guy's not going to make the shot. He's not going to be the one to beat me. Him and maybe that guy. Those two guys are not taking this shot, and you know, and that's what you're doing very often. If that's what you gear your defense to, you can keep those guys from getting the ball or at least getting it in a place where they're going to get a good shot. You got five guys, it's not easy because you don't know where the hell they're going. So that's the upside to it, and that's exactly what they did with the game on the line yesterday against Virginia Tech. They had five different guys step up and make big shots. Kofer made a big shot. Mann made a big shot. Savoy made a big shot. Vassell made the huge three to send the game into overtime. I mean, it's really tough. You got guys from all over the place scoring. None of them made more than one. It wasn't like, well, they had four different guys score, but one guy had three or four baskets. It was really spread out, and they were just making the big plays all across the board, and that makes them a dangerous team, especially if you've got short preparation time like you will if they win in the NCAA tournament. That second game is going to be on one-day prep, not so easy. Virginia, though, is still paying the price in some circles for the loss to UMBC last year, because there's nothing about them that you look at that would lead you to think they're anything but spectacularly good. The numbers are preposterously good. I mean, they still fight so many stereotypes that are, oh, they play so slow. They average 70 points a game. Florida State averages 75. You know, the other teams in this tournament, that's more than Syracuse, who averages 69. You know, that's almost as many as Louisville, who averages 74. Virginia Tech averages 74. So UVA's in the 70s. They score. But all those other teams that are scoring in the 70s and, you know, maybe low 80s are not giving up 54 points a game like UVA does. Their defense is off the charts. They give up 37% shooting, 26% shooting behind the three-point line. And when you shoot threes as well as they do, they have about a 9-point edge behind the arc if they just have average games for them shooting it and the way they defend it. And they've got Kyle Guy shoots 46%, Ty Jerome shoots 40% behind the arc. DeAndre Hunter shoots 48%. Jay Huff, who's become a tremendous weapon for them, 52%. I mean, they got guys who, multiple guys, so it's not just if one guy goes cold and they're in deep trouble. They got other guys who can step up. Their rebound margin is plus 5.5. I mean, that's extraordinary. I mean, Duke, with the great talent of Zion and before he got hurt, Bolden, and they're plus six. You know, I mean, their rebounding numbers are terrific. The only thing they don't force is a lot of turnovers, but that's okay because they don't make any turnovers. They only make 9 a game, and they create about 11. They don't foul you. You know, teams only make 9 free throws a game. So it's just it's what they do. How they do it may change from game to game because they make a tweak here. You know, they weren't doubling yesterday in the post as much as they have been. You know, they've been that's almost a standard. They always double in the post with two bigs. But yesterday against NC State, they played straight up a lot more. And eventually they wear you down. They got a big lead. State made a run. And then the second half, UVA just blew them out of the water. You know, just really put a monster run together in the middle section of the second half. They outscored them by 18 points and broke it wide open. And so that's what they do. And, you know, but I get it. Until they do it in the big tournament, until they do it in the NCAA tournament, the people are still going to question them. But last year, I've said this before, DeAndre Hunter got hurt in the ACC tournament. He didn't play very much in the championship game, but he did play. He didn't play at all in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They don't play, not like Florida State, where they got a million guys. It's not a deep team. They only play about 8. And for a guy like that, who is really much more athletic than a lot of the other guys, it's an incredibly big hole to have to fill. He's one of the top 2 rebounders. He just scores over 15 points a game. He shoots 48% from the 3. He gets to the free throw line more than anybody else they have. He's made more free throws than anybody else they have. For them to have to play that game with no prep time at all, none at all. I mean, it would help if they could have played a game, you know, and got like Virginia Tech is playing well now without you know, Robinson, who's a terrific player, of course, but he's been out so long. When Justin Robinson got hurt, they definitely was a tremendous ding to their team, but they certainly would still love to have him back, but they've reinvented themselves. They've gotten better. UVA didn't have that chance to do that, and so they were really knocked sideways. Not making excuses for them, but I'm just saying, so people still are not willing to take them as seriously, but they may win this whole damn tournament here, as great as Duke is and as great as Carolina is, and I am so looking forward to the matchup tonight. I mean, that could be I said to Bill Rosinski, we need to get our track and field expert in to come join us because that is going to be a track meet. They are going to be flying up and down the floor. The fact is UVA could still win this thing very easily. So it's going to be a great doubleheader tonight. It's been very chalky so far. There were a couple upsets early, but once they've got to the quarterfinals, it has been chalk all the way. It's 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the semis. Number 4, Florida State against UVA, and number 2, North Carolina against number 3, Duke. And we'll have the games tonight here on ESPN Radio. Bill Rosinski and I will have the call. All right, we'll take a break. Mike Pratt is going to join us from the SEC tournament down in Las Vegas. And we're glad that you're able to spend some of your Fast Break Friday with us as well here on the PNV Network. Thanks to our good listeners in Lexington and wherever you're listening to. It's coming to you from ESPN 680 and 105.7 in Louisville.
Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
Did you know in addition to education assistance, UPS now provides housing for qualified employees? Through the UPS Kentucky Living Options and Opportunities Path, also known as UPS Kentucky Loop, you can work part-time in Louisville, go to school at Jefferson Community and Technical College, and receive housing for up to 2 years. Earn a degree or learn a trade. It's up to you. Loop benefits are available to those who live outside the Louisville metro area, whether you're just starting college or going back to school. It's time to get in the loop. For more information, visit upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.